This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, music from DePauw. This week, student producer Anna Gadula talks with music librarian Misty Shaw about a big birthday for Giuseppe Verdi. Scotty Stepp stops in to fill us in on this week's concert by his group, the Soler Quartet. Harp student Alicia Petroni tells us about her thrilling semester abroad in Vienna. Student producer Matt Skiba interviews a surprise guest about this week's jazz ensemble concert. And anticipating this week's visit from guest artist Fernando Otero, we converse with Veronica Pedrell about Otero's musical sphere. There are lots of exciting things going on in the DePauw School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. On Wednesday, October 9th, in Thompson Recital Hall, we will continue our Faculty Select series with the Soler Sax Quartet. And here to chat with me about it is faculty member and member of the quartet, Scotty Stepp. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Hey, we're thrilled about this, and we're looking forward to your performance. So tell me, first of all, a little bit about your name, Soler Sax Quartet.
Yeah, Soler basically is of the sun in French. Huh? So we kind of wanted to pick a name that really defined us as a group, our personalities, and we're pretty upbeat and, you know, live on the
bright side of life. I
thought we
were just all bright guys, you know, four bright guys in a room. We call them the Soler Sax. Okay, I'm with you.
Well, that works too. That works.
Okay, now tell me a little bit about the group.
Otis Murphy, the sax professor at Indiana University, and I have been friends for a long time. So we've kind of tossed around having a saxophone quartet for a number of years, and we just kind of wanted to wait for the right time. And basically 2009, you know, 2008, we decided, let's go ahead and do this. And so a real good friend of mine, Sam Fritz, who is the band director at Center Grove Middle School in Central there in Greenwood, just a fabulous saxophonist. And I wanted to, you know, bring him into the group. And at the time when we formed, we were kind of struggling for a fourth member of the group. And so we found Professor Murphy had a doctoral student who filled in the fourth spot as a Barry player. Mm-hmm. And that worked well, but we knew that was going to be a rotating seat in the group because he would eventually get a job somewhere, and which he, of course, did. So we really wanted to stay centrally located here in Indiana. We didn't know what to do, and so we didn't have a good option for a fourth person. And so we decided to invite my old saxophone professor at Indiana State University. Mm-hmm. So we invited him to kind of sit in as a guest with us, you know, because he's a member of another professional saxophone group, Chicago Saxophone Quartet. So we didn't really know if we could invite him. He said, I wouldn't mind subbing with you guys indefinitely. So so it's kind of a running joke that we're not sure if he's a permanent member or not.
He hasn't passed his audition yet. The 8-year audition is still continuing. That's right.
And since he's the oldest one, we really like to, you know, hold that over his head. So, but no, he's been great to have as a member of the group, and he's just a great kind of thesaurus for us, for us as a saxophone quartet.
So what will you be playing for us?
We've got a really nice program. Well, I hope everybody agrees, but the concept of what we do, and a lot of this has come from the great groups we've had here at DePauw and kind of, you know, seeing what is working and what, you know, what really sells and audiences really enjoy. So we've always been a group that likes to interact a lot with the audience.
Good.
And so it's an important part for all of us because we get to feed off the energy of them as well. We really try to think of our program as a show, you know. I mean, we're not riding around on tricycles or anything, but you know, I mean, we want it to be entertaining. We want the audience to feel invited into what we're doing. So we're really trying to build this concept of kind of a show instead of just like a classical concert.
Right.
I think we've really gone down that path pretty well so far. We have some things that we're still working on, but we've got a really diverse program. We've got some Spanish, some French, some American, of course, and we're going to do a piece by Pedro Interralde, who is a saxophonist as well, and he's done a lot of jazz, and so it's a lot of Spanish, a lot of jazz influence. And so in this piece, ironically, it's Sweet Hellenique, so there's a lot of mixed meter kind of Greek dance, music, and with all those other influences involved. So it's a really nice, eclectic, you know, piece of music. We do an Astor Piazzolla Oblivion piece.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's a great piece.
Yeah, that people know so well because it's been arranged for.
I'm a big Astor Piazzolla fan.
Absolutely. So he just beautiful music, and it's a really fine arrangement for us. And so audiences always really enjoy that. We're doing the George Frederick Handel Arrival of Queen of Sheba, from Solomon. Yeah. And it works really well. Nice arrangement by Jean-Yves Fermeau, French saxophonist. Then we do an American piece by Russell Peck, Drastic Measures. And it's one of my student groups here has played that a lot. So lots of jazz influence in that piece and some interesting, you know, extended technique, slap tongue. And again,
that's a great
fun piece. The second half, we do a piece by David Maslenka. We do a portion of it, just a movement. David's works are just beautiful pieces
they
written
are.
For us. They really are. But his pieces are not short.
No,
they're not. They're not brief in any way. And so we're just really doing an excerpt, you know, one movement from this multi-movement work that was written for saxophone quartet, you know, by him. And it's a beautiful piece. It's based on a Bach chorale.
Mm.
And he's written some really nice program notes for it. So the audience seems to really connect with that piece very well. Our newest composition for the program is a piece by Ennio Morricone, Gabriel's Oboe.
Ah,
yes. So
from The Mission.
That's right, from The Mission. It's a beautiful work, and audiences really, I mean, it's just slow, beautiful, gorgeous music. Beautiful piece. Then we do a piece called Americana Suite by Ralph Martino, and it's an arrangement of, it's the conglomeration of all these Americana pieces, And so we always challenge the audience to sit there and guess how many. You know, different pieces he's actually, you know, written into the chart. And it's a lot of fun. It's a fun piece.
So, sounds like a great program.
Yes, thank you.
The interesting thing for sax quartet, I think you and I may have chatted about this at some point in the past, that Percy Grainger thought that the saxophone was the perfect instrument. And he was deluded in other ways as well. But the reason why was because it could do so many different things,
right.
And it could sound so much like the human voice. And that's true. You guys really can... I mean, in a sax quartet where the timbres are all similar from one instrument to another, you still get this incredible variety of tonal color. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
you guys can do anything. I mean, you can play high, you can play low, you can play fast, you can play slow. You know, it can be
very soft, very loud.
You got it all. Yeah. It's all good. So we're looking forward to a great concert, and thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
From the faculty recital of last Monday, September 30th, pianist Amanda Hobson performs Nocturne, Opus 33, by Samuel Barber.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Matt Skiba. We're changing things up a little bit today on our installment of Student Corner. Today, I will be asking the dean the questions about the jazz band. With us today is pianist Drew Casey.
It's a pleasure to be here, Matt.
It's good to have you. So, Dean McCoy, what made you come back to directing a jazz band?
Well, actually, we had an opening happen late in the season, and we were really happy. Dan Foster did a fantastic job with the band last year, and he had the opportunity to return to his alma mater, and he had just had a new child, and this would put him close to both grandparents. And so for Dan, who was doing a great job, I was thrilled that he got this position for him. For us, I was kind of disappointed. I was sad because he'd done good work and I wanted to keep him around. It happened in the 11th hour. We needed someone in a hurry. And in a former life, I was a jazz studies director. So I decided I'd step back into the fray just as an interim.
Some people have been like, oh, Dean McCoy's so hard on us. He's always yelling at us. He, you know, for a minute late, he, you know, whips us with a saxophone. But, you know, I think we're doing quite well. And it shows the hard work on both sides of Dean and the bands.
Well, I know I'm usually the interviewer and not the interviewee, but I think, Matt, you'd be a person to talk to that one because you've been in the band for a while.
Yeah, I would definitely say the level has changed and the style we're playing too. We're playing a lot of different charts. We used to play a lot of older standards that a lot of people have heard, and it's nice to get a new perspective on jazz and songs that personally I've never heard of.
Mm. So our gig is Tuesday night, October the 8th at 7:30 in Kresge. I love the book that we're playing. Of course, that's one of the great things about being the director, you get to pick the book. But what we're trying to do is present jazz over the years. So for example, we have Duke Ellington, who's my jazz hero. I mean, I think he's one of America's greatest composers. Not one of America's greatest jazz composers. I think he's one of America's great composers. So we have Duke and Count Basie. We do the stuff that you would expect a big band to do. We're also doing Jaco Pastorius, a major voice in this kind of music, and we need to hear his voice. But we also have Maria Schneider, who write some of the most beautiful stuff out there. And I could honestly stand up and introduce each tune and say, and here's my favorite jazz tune, because I can't pick between them.
Yeah, exactly. Would you like to explain real fast the double entendre in Maria Schneider's tune?
It's a wistful tune called Last Season. And you can think of it in that way, that it's last season. This is what we did last season. You know, I remember last season. It was a great season last season. Also could be, this is my last season. And while I thought I already had a last season as a jazz studies director, this is probably my real last season. This is probably my real last season as a jazz studies director.
So, Dean McCoy, you say it's very difficult for you to choose a favorite chart, but Drew, I want to direct this at you. Do you by any chance have a favorite chart or one or two?
Oh, yes, I do.
Bet I can guess. I knew
the
it.
Chicken, the chicken. Oh, man, I love that song. And I love it even more when I brought my Hammond from home just to really wail on that one. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that, because Drew's a great pianist. He's a freshman, great jazz pianist, and very into this, and he's one of the two pianists that we have in the jazz band. And that one's fun, because Jennifer gets to play piano, and Drew gets to play B3, and he was waiting for that.
Yeah, and the whole chart itself is just a great one to play for the entire band.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the problem we're going to have with that chart is that everybody wants to solo in it, and so we could put on our concert, and it could be the DePaul University Jazz Ensemble plays The Chicken, and an hour later we would be done with The Chicken, and that would be the gig.
It'd be quite the show, but
yeah,
there's always that controversy in jazz about having too many soloists or giving
not enough.
Too much.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And this is one that there will definitely be too many.
Okay, well, if you'd like to come out and see the jazz band with the dean directing, and
I'm going to interrupt here.
Go for
because
it.
the dean directing is not the story of this jazz ensemble. Randy Salmon is our featured soloist, a great jazz tenor saxophone player, as well as a great classical clarinetist and one on our faculty here. Randy Salmon is our soloist for probably about half of the show and really is playing some beautiful, beautiful music and really well. So you want to hear Randy. And we also have Annalise Delacombra singing Deedle's Blues. She's Deedle for that night. And that is a hip Count Basie chart, and you don't want to miss her. Drew's a new addition to the band, and there are a lot of freshmen who are doing some really great solos in a lot of different charts.
I did not expect, you know, this freshman class, at least in jazz, is a pretty strong. Kevin, the trombone player, he's got some great chops and really some interesting ideas with his solos, too. For freshmen, he's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's great to see so many young faces in the band again. Last year, we actually only had two freshmen.
Oh, really?
So I think there's a lot to see in this great show, and this band runs itself, so that makes it work really well.
Well, the concert is October 8th, which is a Tuesday, and it begins at 7:30. Hope to see you all there.
Thanks.
Thank you.
From the student recital hour of this past Wednesday, October 2nd, bassoonist Gwen Eberts, oboist Matt Acton, and pianist Lizzie Wynn perform the Presto movement from Francis Poulenc's Trio for Piano, Oboe, and Bassoon.
Thank you. We're members of Fifth House Ensemble.
I'm Eric.
I'm Melissa.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Drew.
And you're listening to Music for Life.
For our next selection from the Producer's Vault, from the student recital hour of this past Wednesday, October 2nd, we have a saxophone quartet. Stephen Lucades on soprano, Alex Dunlap on alto, Melissa Guerrero, tenor, and Sterling Brooks on baritone perform Percy Grainger's piece Shepherd's Hay, arranged for saxophone quartet by Elaine Zajac.
Alicia Petroni is joining me in the studio to chat about her interesting semester abroad in the City of Musicians. Where were you?
I was in Vienna, Austria.
Yeah, Vienna, yeah. Austria. Isn't that a beautiful place?
It was gorgeous. I miss it so much already. As soon as I left, I was like, can I go back now?
And you'll have to go back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
So you spent your entire spring there from when to when?
From mid-January until mid-May.
Wow.
So. Yeah.
And so what were you doing while you were abroad?
I was taking classes through my program IES abroad. And
so what classes were you taking?
I was taking a lot of art history classes so that I knew what I was looking at.
Great place to do that.
Basically, yeah. Right. Most of my classes, the homework would be to go to a museum or like go walk around the city. I'm like, I can do that. That's fine.
Oh, poor you.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But then you also had this great lesson experience.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Yeah. I took lessons from Annalene Lennertz, who is the newest harpist for the Vienna Philharmonic.
The Vienna
yes,
Philharmonic.
The, yes.
The real deal.
That one.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Yeah. So how long has she, was that her first
this
year?
This was her first year in right. the actual Philharmonic. She had been part of the opera orchestra for a couple of years. But yeah, I mean, I even got to take lessons in the opera house. So I would... Yes,
wow.
In the Vienna. Yes. Yeah. So I would meet her at the artist's entrance and... She would let me in and we'd go kind of wind around and get to her little room.
Wow.
Yeah, it was incredible.
And she's not very old, is she?
No, no.
How old is she?
She was about 26, I think.
Now, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
What is she doing in the Vienna Philharmonic at 26?
I don't know. But anytime we had a lesson and she would be like, okay, well, you know, try playing it like this. And she would play something for me. And I would literally just stop and, you know, kind of pick up the drool from the side of my mouth. It was beautiful. She's just an incredible harpist. So
wow. Yeah. So do you feel like that was a blossoming semester for you?
Definitely. Yeah. It was kind of an interesting, it was different from what I expected it to be. My lessons with her, it was more about how to approach the harp. It kind of took a step back and just, okay, you know, how to relax at the harp. And, you know, it wasn't so much technical things. It was just kind of how to approach it in kind of a healthy manner so that I don't get frustrated so easily, or, you know, the love-hate relationship.
Right, yeah, that right, is with any music. Instrument, yeah. Right? Especially with a harp, though.
Yeah.
All those pedals.
Yes. Lots going on. Don't be scared of your instrument.
So did you get to hear her perform?
I didn't actually get to hear her perform, but she did. It was so sweet. She sent me a package a couple of weeks ago of a book that she let me borrow.
Wow.
And then her own CD of her playing. So
isn't that fantastic?
Yeah,
you know, those are incredible memories and relationships that last your entire lifetime.
Definitely.
So I'm sure it was hard to come back to the United States from Vienna.
Yes, it is. It's still kind of an adjustment, but honestly, I knew as soon as I got there the first time that I would be coming back. So it's not really, it's a goodbye for now. It's not a never see it again kind of thing.
And Vienna is just in the center of so many things. It's
everything.
Been the city of musicians for decades or for centuries, and a remarkable city. Well, I'm glad you got to visit and to spend some time there. And thanks for coming in to chat.
Yeah, thank you.
From the Student Recital Hour of this past Wednesday, October 2nd, cellist Peter Lockman and pianist Wonmin Kim perform the Allegro non troppo movement from Camille Saint-Saëns' Concerto in A Minor, Opus 33. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joe Flummerfelt, and you're listening to Music for Life.
This is student producer Anna Gattula. On October 10th, we will be celebrating renowned opera composer Giuseppe Verdi's 200th birthday. I invited our music librarian, Misty Shaw, to talk a little Verdi with me. Welcome, Misty. Thanks for stopping by.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell me, why are we celebrating Verdi's birthday when he's not even alive anymore?
There are so many reasons why people continue to love Verdi and want to perform all of his operas. I could talk a little bit about that if you like.
Sure.
Well, Verdi was one of those composers who never settled on a particular sound. For each opera he wrote, he did something new or innovative. Mm-hmm. For example, he started using prominent, grandiose choruses. A lot of people, when they think of Verdi, they think of that big chorus sound.
Mm-hmm. Nabucco.
Exactly. Yeah. The chorus could be very expressive, and it might be a part of why Italian audience members were so roused nationalistically when they heard his music. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was from the choruses. He would sometimes pay really close attention to harmony and orchestration to help move along the drama. He was also able to write comic operas that still had a serious context. Mm-hmm. Rigoletto is a really good example of that.
So dark.
So very dark. Except in La Traviata, he used modern waltzes of his current time period that pervade the score, which his audiences loved. So many different things he tried to do, and most of his operas were pretty successful. Of the 30-odd or so operas he wrote, at least half of them are still in the standard repertoire today.
I know La Scala this summer did Un Ballo in Maschera. So
that was actually the first opera I ever saw professionally performed. It was with my sister. We went to the Dallas Opera. We saw a masked ball and we dressed up. And even though we were way back up in the top tier, it was so moving and very dramatic and exciting. Definitely. I was glad it was my first experience seeing one.
Definitely a fun one. So his contemporaries really enjoyed him, but how has he endured until today? I mean, we still celebrate him. We still perform a lot of his works.
I think one of the reasons is that the music itself is fun to listen to, and it's memorable, and the plots can be memorable as well. For many people, their first introduction to opera was through those Bugs Bunny cartoons. But for me, my first introduction to opera was La Traviata in the movie Pretty Woman. And there was this common plot theme of a hooker with a heart of gold. And that's why La Traviata was chosen specifically for that movie. Mm-hmm. And at the time, as a preteen, I loved the movie, but I had no idea why La Traviata was specifically chosen for the movie. But now I do know why. It's because the plots mirrored each other. And I think that's part of what can make an opera endure, is if its material is still relevant to one's daily life. And it certainly is. A woman who is worried about bringing a scandal to a rich person's family, making a sacrifice. Of course, Julia Roberts doesn't die of consumption in the end.
Spoiler alert.
That's part of what makes La Traviata so moving, is that you know how it's going to end. It's going to be sad, but sometimes life is sad.
Sometimes life is sad. And Verdi wrote in the Verismo style, and he tried to bring realism, the romantic idea of realism, back into opera.
Exactly. Even if it's a comic opera, there was going to be some serious getting real with his audiences.
So do you have any personal experience with any Verdi operas or Verdi works?
Well, I was really excited when I was an undergraduate and performed in my first opera, which was La Traviata. I was a cellist in the pit. It was my first pit experience, and I felt really excited to be contributing to something that felt really professional. And it was especially fulfilling that this first opera I'd ever really heard of was the one that we were performing. I learned more about Verdi. I learned about the opera. I learned about the style, and I was able to contribute. And it was one of the more proud moments, I think, of my undergraduate pit playing career, was playing La Traviata.
Well, thanks for stopping by, Misty.
Thank you so much for having me. And for anyone who's never listened to Verdi, I think that there's a Verdi opera for everyone. And if you're interested in finding that Verdi opera for you, please feel free to stop by my office in the music library. We'd be happy to connect you with a sound recording that you will like.
Happy birthday, Verdi, and I hope you take a big enough breath to blow out 200 birthday candles.
On Friday, October 11th, at the special start time of 8 p.m., we will feature the Latin Grammy-winning Fernando Otero on stage at Kresge Auditorium. And here to chat with me about Fernando, this great jazz pianist, is one of our own jazz pianists, a faculty member and a staff member as well, Veronica Pedrell. Welcome.
It's a delight to be here.
So, you know of Fernando's music?
I've heard some of his music, and he invokes for me some of the earlier work by Astor Piazzolla.
Yeah,
the
Tango Nueve.
The Tango Nueve. They're both Argentinian composers. And so I would say that Otero falls into his footsteps, but he does some really neat kind of fusion stuff, taking the tango and blending it not only with jazz and pop influences, but also with more austere classical kind of influence
right.
as well.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we're here trying to describe someone who's almost indescribable. There's what he does is so cutting edge. So he's won a Grammy as a classical composer. I think he's been nominated for them as pop composer as well. You know, I know he has videos that are very pop oriented. He also has albums that are very classically oriented. And it's funny that you mentioned Astor Piazzolla, because I felt exactly the same way when I heard him. I felt like, boy, I feel like I'm listening to Astor Piazzolla's son, you know, the follower of Astor Piazzolla, because Piazzolla with Tango Nueve was very much ridiculed when he first came out. And then, because it's the second tango, it's not the true Argentinian tango. It's a new tango. And in a way, he's almost the third tango.
Indeed.
Some really remarkable music that this man is capable of playing. Now, he's coming to us with a quartet, but he also plays with a sextet, a septet, a quintet, a duo.
Whatever the forces need.
Yeah. And interestingly, he's growing in popularity around this country and also throughout South America. What albums of his are you into?
The one that I'm particularly into is the Pagina de Buenos Aires, which is the one that won the Latin Grammy for the classical category in 2010. That album has some really spiffy blends of classical influence in it that are a little bit tighter classically for me. It invokes more of that. There's one piece on it particularly that almost harkens of some of the minimalism of folks like Steve Reich in the 60s, but it's always coming back to some of the cool and hip jazz rhythms that I remember as a kid listening to Chick Corea and Gary Burton, who were also taking music not only of Spain, but music of the Afro-Brazilian tradition and bringing that into a jazz sphere too. So this also sort of picks up on that vibe and takes it in a new direction as well.
It's fascinating stuff, what he is capable of doing. And I encourage you to Google him. But if you're going to listen to him online, click at least three links, because it sounds like three different groups. I mean, his classical stuff is one complete voice. It's a fully matured voice. But then you hear his pop stuff, and it's a total, it doesn't seem like it come out of the same body. And then,
and yet it's just as mature.
It is. That is true. I'll give him that too, because it's really fantastic stuff. And then, you know, some of this Tango Nueve and, you know, the bandoneon and all of the stuff that he adds harkens back to Astor Piazzolla, but it's got a harder edge and it's much more forward. Fascinating man. And we're looking forward to having him here on stage Friday night, the next in our guest artist series concert. That event will also have a major announcement about the future of the School of Music. It's going to be a great night of celebration. A lot of exciting things happening that evening. Friday, October 11th at 8 p.m., our guest artist series continues with the Grammy Award winning Fernando Otero. And thanks for coming in to chat about it.
It'll be exciting.
In honor of the 77th birthday of American composer Steve Reich, which was last Thursday, October 3rd, here's an excerpt from his piece Music for 18 Musicians, which he completed in 1976. Here are sections 3A and 3B from the October 1996 Steve Reich and Musicians recording on the Nonesuch label.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depaul.edu. We're also on Facebook at DePaul Music for Life, and you can subscribe to our show on iTunes by searching there for DePaul Music for Life. Our student producers are Anna Gatdula, Matt Skiba, Rachel Clark, Katie Sherman, and Burke Stanton. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week.
It's Music for Life.